Welcome to the Brad and Body Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Well, hello to the Brad and Body Podcast. It is now coming to you with the Australian Boomers being the bronze medalist, buddy.
Oh, yeah. How good was that? Just sensational. I'm still high. I think most people in Australian basketball are still high on it. Just such a fantastic moment, such a fantastic game. What a performance.
Yeah, mate, and my TV is not talking to me. I yelled at it that much. It's just unbelievable. Now, to all our listeners, this is a later podcast of the week, and purely because we have the Doyon. We have a very, very, very special guest today, and we held this back because we wanted to get the guy, and we have. And I'm really looking forward to this one, buddy.
Yes, so am I. Absolutely.
Please, so the person intro. We have is an NBL champion and an Australian Boomer legend. Born in Thursday Island, Queensland, he played 217 NBL games for St Kilda, Geelong and the great Brisbane Bullets, winning three championships on the way. He is an NBL Hall of Famer, the Victorian University Sports of Hall of Fame inductee. He is the second Indigenous Australian to compete in basketball at the Olympics, following in the footsteps of course, the great Michael Armat. He was an Australian Boomer team member attending the 1980 Moscow Olympics and the 84 Los Angeles Olympics. Apart from playing, he's become a coach in the QBL, completed a Bachelor of Arts degree, and he is also the uncle of the greatest Olympian basketballer. Yes, I'm saying that, buddy. The greatest Olympian basketballer, Paddy Mills. And, of course, Nate Jawai. Of course, I'm talking to none other than Danny Morsu. Danny, so privileged to have you here.
Oh, matey, so proud to be on here, matey. I'm excited and thrilled that you guys have given me the opportunity to get an interview, mate.
Well, Danny, you know, we've known each other a long time, and I know what I was going through on Saturday night as someone who's been involved in basketball for a long time and pretty much my lifetime waiting for that moment. I can't imagine what you were experiencing during the course of that game as it unfolded, and also in the wake of Paddy's interview. Please, just take us through what you went through.
Oh, matey, look, I was sitting in the lounger and watching the game, and, you know, the pace of the game, and I was just so excited, and I was sitting on the edge of my chair, and so into it, and you know, keeping my fingers crossed, like everybody else around the country, our basketball community around the country, just excited and just waiting for that win. You know, it's taken us 56 years to get there, mate, you know. And we finally got there. How great was that game? Absolutely awesome, mate.
Yep. Shed any tears?
Oh, absolutely. It was a very great. I must say, I did have a bit of, you know, I did cry because as a proud Boomer, former Boomer, and you know, it was those sort of special moment. We went so close in playing in 1980 at the Moscow Olympics, and we went so close there to make the top six in the world. And it was just unfortunate what has happened in that game, you know. Like, we played against, we had Italy, ourselves, Sweden, and Cuba in our draw. And we played Cuba, and we were up and lost control, and, you know, end up losing by about 7 points, and played Sweden, blew Sweden away, and beat Italy that year in 1980. And Italy had to beat Cuba by exactly 7 points. Any other figure, 6 or 8, we would have gone to the top six back then. So, you know, we were so close, but we didn't quite get there. It was just unfortunate.
Yeah, it makes me laugh. Hang on a second, Brad, because it makes me laugh when FIBA has a crack at Australia about Angola. You know, which the game at the, I think it was the 2014 World Cup, they sort of said that we didn't put our best foot forward, yet you would have been sitting there in the stands watching Italy and Cuba contrive a 7-point result, the only way to keep Australia out of the top six. And, you know, FIBA turns a blind eye to that sort of stuff. But anyway, let's move on, because you must have sensed during the week, even just watching them play, that they were men on a mission. I mean, Paddy was leading men on a mission. These guys, you know, they were trying for gold, and if they fell short, they were going to still come away with a medal. Whereas I felt teams in the past have sort of aimed at a medal, and because that hasn't been specific, we've missed. Did you feel during the week watching in that these guys can get it done?
Oh, absolutely. The nucleus of the team is just unbelievable, with Ingles, Paddy, you know, Dellavedova, you know, and Bainsey, let's unfortunately got injured. But look, at the end of the day, all the other boys really stepped up, and they really stepped up. You know, Lendell's really stepped up. I was just so over the moon and excited about the game, and the boys, you know, just gelled at the right time, and really, you know. As you know, preparation for those sort of tournaments are very difficult for us in Australia. We only get a week opportunity, and you get players from all over the world to come and play together. Yep. 1 week is about getting the chemistry right. And look, I must admit, Brian Gorgian did a fantastic job pulling that together. Short period of time. And the outcome, the result for us at the end of the day was absolutely fantastic.
Danny, I want to ask, because the thing that I look at this team and the proud for me as a basketballer in this country is how proud they are to be playing in that singlet. I have never seen, and I mean, I watch a lot of basketball, but I reckon every country that was in the Olympics would be looking at Australia going, man, how tight is that group? And that's because of Paddy. And the way Paddy, that interview at the end where he, you know, congratulated Uncle Danny and the pride that he got from doing that, where does that come from? Because that has just been unbelievable.
Look, Benny and Patrick's parents, Benny and Yvonne Mills, you know, we've been very, very close for a very long time, even before Paddy was even thought of. And I recall when I left Thursday Island and went down to Melbourne, you know, to join St Kilda Basketball Club, Benny and Yvonne came down and stayed with me for a while, and they've been my number one supporters right throughout my career. Even coming down to watch grand finals and NBL games in Sydney, driving from Canberra, because they were based in Canberra, but they did come down from Torres Strait, spent a week with me before they actually went to Canberra to start work. And look, and Paddy wasn't even thought of. Like when Paddy came along, when I used to go to Canberra, I used to go and stay at their place. And we sit around the dinner table, and I always say to Paddy, "You've got to beat Uncle's record. You've got to go." And those memories, fond memories of us spending those quality times together when he was growing. And athletically, he was good at athletics, and also AFL and basketball. He chose basketball. And what you need to keep in mind too, it wasn't easy for him to get into the AIS. And we continued to push for him to get in there, and he finally got there. But look, Patrick's record is just outstanding. And he's gone ahead and went to 4 Olympic Games, you know. Yeah. He broke all my records. And
he doubled you. But tell us now, let's go back a bit before Paddy and back to you. How is it that you come to basketball? Because I would have thought, up in that particular region, the rugby would have been the sport that would have been the most accommodating, that you might have been drawn to. So how did you discover basketball? And then tell us about the journey down to St Kilda, because that was obviously really significant.
Okay. Well, look, it is very, very important to say this. I really take my hat off to Michael Lamatt. Michael Lamatt came here and actually ran a basketball clinic out here on Thursday Island. And, you know, and I couldn't, you know, he was teaching us to do layups, but I couldn't even bloody do a layup in those days, you know. He was the one that sort of inspired me, and he's my role model. It was really touch base to meet an Olympian that came to Thursday Island in the Torres Strait. And his family's from up here, too. He's a Torres Strait Islander as well as Aboriginal, the same as Paddy. And in the thing, he's just a fabulous man. The man has sort of got me on my journey. And what has happened was, Monty and Brad, is just that it's sort of what's in the back of your mind, because on Thursday Island, you have to leave Thursday Island to go and get a decent job in Cairns. And when I went down to Cairns, I actually started playing rugby league. And well, you know, rugby league's huge up in the Torres Strait. And we did play rugby league up in cricket, you know, basketball, or volleyball. But, you know, I had a passion for basketball after Michael came up here. He introduced me to it and told me a story about his journey, you know, when he went to the Olympics and that. Oh, that really inspired me. Yep. But when I went to Cairns for work, I didn't go down to play basketball in his sport, but I saw the opportunities around the country. It's sort of the doors sort of opened up, and there's so many opportunities, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, I could have done a trade, I could have been a printer. There was all sorts of jobs offered to me. But I said, look, I don't really want to take a job. I'm going to work for a firm called Radio Rentals for a while and really get the feel of the place, you know. And that's what I did. And I started playing basketball in Cairns. And there was, a guy by the name of Ezra Savica. He used to pick me up, a Torres Strait Islander guy, and took me down to the basketball courts and used to come around every bloody afternoon, pick me up and look, shoot around hoops and stuff. And then, you know, I ended up meeting Patsy and Georgie Alati in Cairns, who was running Kiwis Basketball Club, great friends of mine today. And they got me involved in the game. And then I ended up meeting the Goldfinches, Frank Goldfinch, Ken Goldfinch, and Johnny Grantham, who's one of the players who played, represented Queensland. And they took me under their wing as well and sort of helped me along the way to achieve my dreams and aspiration. And they keep pumping into me, man, you can play for Australia, you can play for Australia. And well, you know, like me, you know, I was very laid back up in Queensland. You know, going, oh, yeah, right, okay. But I took their advice on board, and I worked extremely hard, trained every day, shoot around, took over 200 shots a day, and just get the ball rolling. And, you know, it wasn't until St. Kilda Basketball Club actually came up as to do a tour of Queensland as part of Queensland Basketball Association in the day's development program. And they came up to Cairns, and we played a series of games, one in Mackay, then one in Cairns, and one up at Mareeba. And Brian Kell always tell me this story, you know, and he said to me, he said, yeah, I remember the day I saw you walk in the stadium bare feet, you know, getting ready for the basketball game. It was flooding outside. We were still sort of walking and carrying our shoes in the door to play basketball. And it all started there. And straight after the game, I went up to Brian and, you know, said that there was an opportunity to go to Melbourne to play for St. Kilda Basketball Club. And it's all history after that.
Yeah. And great history.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And that's what was it like having to leave where you've grown up and being in that family environment to now have to go to St. Kilda and, I guess, in a sense, on your own?
Yeah, on my own. You know, life is a risk, Brad. You know, it is a risk. Yep. And I went down there, said, look, I've got to give it a shot. And, you know, I had my critics. People were saying, oh, he's not going to make it, you know. But I went down there and I was ready and I was focused. And I started training and running in the morning and training with the team in the afternoon and just really stayed focused on my dreams and aspirations to play for Australia, to wear the green and gold, you know. And because I went down there and it was just great along the way to win a few championships with a mate of mine, Larry Sengstock. And we were both sort of traveled down from Queensland. Larry was 16 and I was 17. And, lived together, went to university together and graduated from university and stuff. So we still keep in contact today and we're great mates.
Yeah. And I mean, there you are, 78, you're playing at the FIBA World Championship, 80 Olympics. I just wanted to ask you, the 80 Olympics in Moscow and then the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles, they must have been like chalk and cheese, those two games. Like you've gone to this sort of communist country and then you've gone to the most commercial place in the world. Did you notice any huge differences or is the actual Olympic experience the same, doesn't matter what the destination is?
Oh, look, it's very different, you know. Moscow was very, very different, cold, no advertisement or anything like that in the streets, you know, and you hardly saw any families around or kids playing in the street or traveling around the place, you know. And I recall talking to one of the interpreters who was looking after us, and I said to him, mate, I haven't seen any kids around here. And he turned around and said to me, no, we send them to recreation camps and that every summer. And I'm going, yeah, pull the other leg, mate, you know. But meanwhile, I don't believe you, you know. But and communism, it's like when you went around the place, you feel like there's someone following you around. In the days, like as comparison to LA, like there was only one disco in town. And we just went to that one disco and everybody went there, you know, it was playing. That was after the Olympics was over, of course. But as comparison, comparative to Los Angeles, where it was just commercial. And, you know, McDonald's, Hungry Jack, everybody got involved, you know, and he was, and in, like it was paid by the government. But in the United States of America, it was just commercial private companies actually sponsoring the events. So there's the contrast there was just amazing.
Yeah. When you, go, Brad.
I was going to ask, when you look at these Olympics now, what comes flooding back? Is it memories of you or how different it is now? Like, what is the thought going through an ex-Olympian's mind when you're watching this?
The change of the game. You know, you got to keep in mind we only have 2 pointers in Moscow, and the rules change as well, and our players need to adapt to that. And you know, the 3-point range, Ian Davies was around then, was playing with us in top scored in the 1980 Olympics, mate. He would have, you know, with 50 points a game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know, the change in the game and the style of the game now is played today, and the exposure a lot of those players, the Australian players out today, compared to like what we were growing up. You know, a lot of these guys now are playing professionally around the world. When we were playing, we had to work and then have that balance between basketball and playing for your country. Or we were either studying or work, you know. That's the big difference. Where a lot of these kids, players today, are playing full-time professionally. And I wish the opportunity, you know.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Now, the other thing that I found interesting is that in 1981, St Kilda basically won the regular season championship but didn't compete in the NBL finals because they had been invited to attend the what was going to be hopefully a regular thing but didn't become a regular thing, the World Club Championship, and that was in Brazil. And when you came back from that, when St Kilda came back from that, someone came up with a great idea of a super challenge, a tournament in Adelaide where West Adelaide, who are the local champions, St Kilda, who probably should have won the championship, Launceston, who did win the championship, and Geelong, playing coached by our friend Cal Bruton, as the Siebel champions and as a team that was going to be promoted into the NBL in 1982, someone put together this 4-team tournament. And the only thing I remember about that 4-team tournament, Danny, is you going down and really severely injuring your knee. That's the only thing I remember. I don't know who won it. I don't remember much about it. It's just that you were such an athlete, so brilliant. And when you went down, you crashed, and that was, everybody knew that was serious. You make it back to the 84 Olympic team, which I think is just an outstanding thing. So just tell me, what was the injury? Was it ACL? I can't remember that. I'm getting a bit old, but it was. I know it was really bad and put you out for a year.
Yeah, matey. Look, it is. It was disappointing. It was an ACL that I tore, and you know, it's the cruciate ligament, and you know, it stopped me from twisting and turning.
Yeah.
And certainly put myself out. I didn't really want to go to that tournament. I said to Brian, I don't want to go because I was studying at the time. I don't think it was important for me to go there.
No,
but,
no.
You know, really, Brian.
Sixth sense, yeah. Danny. It was a sixth sense. Yep.
Yeah. And what has happened during the game? I think we were playing West Adelaide with Ken Richardson, Leroy Loggins, and Peter Alley. And, you know, and look, it was a freak accident that happened. When I tore my cruciate ligament, that was pretty much you lost your explosiveness. Your game wasn't the same. And I went through rehab, you know, nearly 16 months of rehab. Then I came back in 1983. I missed the 82 season. And I came back in 83 to play in the NBL. And it was great. And I ended up, coming back and playing a season with Brian. And then after that, I went to Geelong to play for the Supercats in the day.
Yep.
But it's a long process, mentally tough to go through that. I, you know, take my hat up to any athletes who've gone through that process and to recover And it was a long time. I did a lot of swimming, a lot of cycling, and just went weights, but just modifying my program. So there wasn't a lot of pounding in terms of running around Albert Lake, you know, in the days. But yeah, look, it is what it is that has happened. It was unfortunate. And, you know, I felt that maybe I would have gone to a few more Olympics if I would have wasn't injured that got that injury. But it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, in 82, that's probably what cost you the obviously that's what cost you being in the 82 team for the World Championship. But hey, like I said, you made it back. You were back to being an Olympian in 84 from an ACL at a time. I mean, we're talking 40 years ago, at a time when you know, the recovery, the rehab, the surgery, everything about ACLs was not where it is now. So I still think that was a phenomenal performance. Even though, yeah, as you say, your game did change. Some of the explosiveness was gone, but now I felt you were a more solid defender. Maybe that's because you were ground bound a bit more than you had been previously when you're leaping all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Look, it was tough coming back. It was never, ever the same. You're never the same player, you know, you used to be. But the experience and lots of knowledge you've experienced through that process and what you've been to player is just phenomenal. And to today, like I have reflect back to what has happened now. When Paddy and the boys won the bronze medal now, and the opportunities for rehab today is very different. You know, the recovery is a lot quicker than it was in the day. So, and, you know, technology has changed as well. You know, social media is totally different world today compared to when we were around playing and you were writing stories about us, mate, you know, and tell me and all that sort of stuff. Take my supporting us, and your love and passion for basketball is, you know, second to none, mate. And I really take my hat off to you guys and the basketball community in Adelaide, who've been, you know, very, very supportive of my career. And I recall I went back when I was playing for St Kilda Basketball Club. I started playing down there. It was a retirement game for Michael Armat and Werner Lynn.
Oh yeah, and yes, that's right.
We did play an exhibition game to say, you know, that was their last game and that at that level. And I remember that game vividly. I even have Michelle sent me a program. Michael's daughter sent me a program of, you know, who was playing the games and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was just really, really fond memory of Michael. And Werner was as well one of the great, you know, great players. And absolute legend of basketball, has sort of been instrumental in, you know, getting St Kilda Basketball Club to the highest level of basketball in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Danny, can I ask, what took you from Geelong to Brisbane, or was it pretty much just the name Brian Curl?
Oh, look, Brian's been on my case, Brian Curl. You just graduate from university. When I graduated, I had to go back home, you know, and the weather lifestyle, I guess, is and coming back home to Queensland is always great. And, you know, going back to Brian, you know, someone you know has been with you on your journey in life and knows a lot about you and your capability, what you can do and all that sort of stuff. And going back is like, you know, because of my injury, I was playing more of a role play coming off the bench, you know. You know, I was averaging probably over 20 points a game in the NBL. And when I came back, I just played a role play. And that was fine with me because I didn't. The legendary Leroy Loggins and Larry and Ronnie the Rat and all the boys, Robbie Sibley and John Dorge, was playing with the Bullets starters in the days. And I was happy to support, you know, some of the great Queenslanders who ever played a game. So it was great from that point of view.
And then, Danny, what are you doing now? Like, you're obviously a long time retired from playing. What's your role now?
Well, you know, I sort of moved back to Thursday Island because my mother wasn't well. It's time for family. You know, you've been, 40 years away playing basketball. And so it was an opportunity for me to come back there to move into old people's home. So I decided to move up here and I rang one of the state government agencies in Brisbane and asked them if there was an opportunity to get closer to home, if I can get a job. And I was actually coaching basketball in Toowoomba, the men's team in the basketball league at the time. And And there'd be someone that'd come back for mum, and they actually got me a job on Thursday Island. And we wouldn't believe it. Everything fell into place. And now the regional manager now for Department of Seniors Disability Services and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Partnerships on Thursday Island, which covers like Northern Peninsula area, Cape York, and also the 13 islands, 18 islands of the Torres Strait and the five communities in the NPA. So it's a lot of work, a lot of challenges still, but I need to keep myself active. And I've been involved in the Indigenous Basketball Association program, Pat Briggs program now, to look at develop the capabilities and capacity of the kids up here to perform at the national championship. It was proposed to start down at the Gold Coast April, but it was postponed, and the last school holidays was postponed, and you know, it looks like it's going to be postponed next month, but we may have it in December now. But it's Patrick's program now. I'm the ambassador for his program, to promote his program and try and get his program ran up in the front. Mate, when you think about it, an opportunity, you've got an NBA program, junior program running in your community. Well, you can say, mate, I've got to do something about this. I've got to keep it, get it going, and you know, build the capacity of the coaches, the referees, passive sort of getting involved in the game at the grassroots level. And you know, what a great program it is, because what it is, you get kids to 14, 13 and 12 actually you know, playing basketball in this program, and they go to national championships, and a lot of these kids have never traveled out of our community, right. And no, they're going to the Gold Coast and they get selected in the national team, and then they go to the Asia Pacific Rim to play against, you know, teams from Japan, China, and all over the place. And then they go to the World Championship in Florida for the NBA Junior Championship. How great is that?
Yeah,
so it's phenomenal. Really staying involved in the game. I think it's fantastic. You know, the program's free, so it's about encouraging kids in our community now to make things happen. And Patrick is the leader of that program.
Yeah.
And the Mills are involved with the program. So I'm involved in the ambassador role now to support the program, to encourage Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids in the Torres Strait region and the Cape York region to actually play basketball now and provide that support from them, for them, and to give them the opportunity to play in the game we love so much,
yeah.
Monty. You know,
yeah.
And you know, the platform now for the 2032 Olympics is great, because these kids,
yes, of course.
When the time comes around for the 2032 Olympics in Brisbane. So it's a bit of excitement. And one of the things I'd like to see happen up on Thursday Island now is facility development.
Yes.
We need proper up here for, you
Agreed.
Know, where we can events and entertainment to develop basketball. We can have exhibition games for the Australian team to come up, play exhibition game, NBL teams to come up to the Torres Strait and Thursday Island to play. And it's about that broader thing where Patrick's always promoting that. It's about that, you know, when people come up here and they play basketball exhibition game up here as a starting point to get the program off the ground, get a bit of interest. And it's about, you know, the future of the kids and how do we support those kids. And so I'm working, you know, I'm a member of the Indigenous Advisory Group now to the Australian Olympic Committee as well. So I'm sort of working closely with the AOC and along with the federal government and also with the state government to look at what can we do to build a really nice facility for our community up here in the Torres Strait, and link it with the schools program for development, you know, for young kids from the outer islands of the Torres Strait who actually come here and go to school here on Thursday Island, and start creating that pathway and opportunity through that program.
Danny, you've just explained probably 32 hours of work in one day. How do you actually fit all of this in? Do you get time to sleep?
Mate, I tell you, it's a lot of hard work. You know, it's about passion for the game. And
yes,
commitment.
Absolutely.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's coming out in droves. You can hear it.
So it must have been so good on Saturday night. I mean, just for that entire Look, it was great for Australia, but for that community to see one of their own performing in that way on that stage. I mean, Danny, we've been around a long time. We've seen a lot of great performances, but there's very few that come even close to what Paddy did in that grand final, 42 points, 9 assists. I mean, and winning a bronze medal, which was the most important part of it, obviously. It just must have been huge. The celebration must have been huge.
Oh, the celebration is not over yet, mate. It's still going. People. It's all happening, mate. Celebrating. The family, in particular, in the Torres Strait, is just celebrating. And the entire community is just buzzed because of this achievement, what the Boomers have done. And you know, yeah. Patrick is leading the way at the Olympic Games, especially in that particular game. You know, it's there, people's mind up here, people's conscience in that. And the thing, the people are just ecstatic in the Torres Strait and NP. They're all over the moon and just passionate about basketball. You see kids I see sitting in my office now just looking out when after school kids are dribbling basketball along the bloody Esplanade.
Yeah, so, I mean, if Basketball Australia was smart, which they aren't, unfortunately, but if they were smart, they should be producing Australian singlets for sale, number 5, Mills on the back, and kids right around the country would be wearing those things right now, everywhere, not just in that region, right around the country.
One. I think BA's. I'd buy one, that's for sure.
Yeah,
for my
I'd buy one.
Yeah. And you're right, our entire basketball community, right throughout the country, are so proud of our achievements and what Patrick's done and the way he's carried himself and all the boys out there handle that situation. You know, I mean, you know, in that particular game against Slovenia, you know, the Slovenia has kind of lost the plot a little bit, you know, the textiles and the, you know, it sort of helped us a little bit through that. And, you know, and the boys were still calm. I was watching them. They were calm and composure. And Brian was gorgeous with composure on the side. It was just so beautiful to watch that game. Yes, clinched that win.
Danny, I think that's what everyone in Australia, like, we love it because we're basketball junkies, right? We just love it and we want to see the win. But you look at the rest of Australia, I think it's just how proud that team portrayed themselves. And I put that probably a little bit like Jessica Fox in the canoeing where, you know, it was they just knew what it meant to them that the whole of Australia just – you just couldn't get and watch Andrew Gaze crying on TV. Like the whole thing was just, you know, Basketball Australia have a big job to do now because we are never where we've been right now. And this is just so good. And now in 12 years' time, we've now got the Olympics coming to Brisbane. This is, it's 11 now, sorry. This is just the perfect time.
I mean, the platform's great for, you know, like facility development, planning with government at the local level, state level and the federal level, you know, to come together to look at, you know, because when you think about it, there's some champions coming out of the Torres Strait. I mean, Michael Armat's one of them, myself, you know, Paddy Mills and, you know, great basketball, and Nathan Jawai as well. He plays for the Cairns Titans. So we got some big timbers up here, I'll be honest with you. And it's build and, you know, help them to realize that they can hoop. And some of these kids get, and I'm telling you, just natural ability. It's about how do we coach them now? How do we bring the best out of them and link them to a good program, you know, NBL programs, state programs, and also, you know, the AIS basketball program and all that sort of. How do we do that now? How do we, you know, we sort of looking at ways of how do we bring these kids through a process and support them and ensure, and it's, you know, with strong cultural values as well, you know, and it's a common. And people need to keep in mind, too, that in the Torres Strait, English is not the first language, you know, it's for some of us, it's a second, third, maybe fourth language for some of the kids up here. In our own country. And the thing is, it's about how do we nurture those and bring them through to achieve their dreams and aspiration in basketball.
All right, Danny, we've reached that point in the program where we like to say to our guest, we'd like to throw some names at them, and we want you just to respond with your first reaction, like, so a one-word response or a one sentence just about these people. Brad's waving to me, so apparently I'm going first. So the first name I'm going to throw at you is Brian Curl.
a great coach and a good man.
Beautiful. I'm going to go with someone else that you know very well. Leroy Loggins.
A true champion and the greatest player I ever played against.
Wow.
Right. Larry Sengstock.
A true mate, a true champion, know how to win championships.
Yeah, great point. Cal Bruton.
A legend. The greatest point guard that ever played the game in Australia.
Wow.
Wow, okay. Nate Jawai.
A true centre, a big man, and can hoop.
And I'm going to round it out with the golden boy, of course, Paddy Mills.
Well, one of the greatest players that ever played the game for Australia.
Yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. Danny, that was absolutely brilliant. I had goosebumps listening to you. You are an amazing man, what you've done for the sport, what you've done for communities. You are just amazing to this sport. And number one, on behalf of everyone in basketball, we can't thank you enough. But Boddy and I just want to say thank you so much for joining us in what has been an amazing week for Australian basketball.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks, Boddy.
No worries. Pleasure.
Boddy, we've interviewed a number of people, but I was just sort of sitting there sort of like spellbound, a bit like my mouth was open. You know what I mean? Just like
I could see that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wow, listen to him talk, you know, like just he's like that. He's like your principal, isn't he? You will not say a word when he's talking.
No, you want to hear it all.
Yeah, because you just want to, unbelievable. What a great, what a great man.
But that connection, I mean, we know of his connection to Paddy. But his connection to Michael Armand, that Michael went up there, up north, and it was and exposed him to basketball. Now that's mind blowing for me. That I didn't know that, but that connection is so good. You know, it's wonderful. And there's Michael, who's the first Indigenous basketballer to attend an Olympics at Tokyo, and then there's Paddy and along the line playing sensationally at Tokyo, and we went out for this medal. It's great.
I mean, the last time we spoke, we did not have a bronze medal, mate.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
And you know, I'm watching that game, and I tell you, I had tears in my eyes to watch Paddy Mills when the interview to ask him, I think it was Mel McLaughlin or whatever it was, and when he said, you know, what about this to your parents or something like that, and he just like the tears that he was holding back to say, I'm bringing that medal home to hang up, you know, like oh my god,
brilliant.
Oh my god,
yeah. He put in a performance where it was evident very early that if they were going to lose, he was not going to leave any doubt about you know, he was just not going to let them lose, put it that way. He just would not let them lose, and he was brilliant in the first half when they needed him to be brilliant, and then in the second half he was brilliant in a different way. He went from 26 points in the first half to 16 points in the second, knowing he was going to attract more defensive pressure, dishing it out to people, getting 9 assists. And fortunately, Joe Ingles had his three-point hat on, was making those shots. Matisse Thybul.
What a week he had. Was. I mean, like he and
Dante Exum.
Dante and Nick Kay.
Nick Kay,
those three were just phenomenal. You know, Paddy was Paddy, although he went to another level and he put on his Superman suit, as we know, right? And Joe, I think he'd be the first one to say, didn't have a fabulous few games, but in that final, stood up, man. That was just brilliant.
9 rebounds, big rebounds.
Dude. Brilliant and composed. Just gave that, you saw, all right, now I see why Utah are paying him, you know, 80 mil or whatever. Like, you just saw that player. And just to watch Slovenia just literally capitulate.
And it was,
they did. They capitulated because Australia just were that stoned face. They were like, nah, you throw everything at us, we're still coming.
That's right.
And I love it. I love it. That was the greatest basketball game I think I've watched for the Boomers, obviously, but unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, on paper, you wouldn't go, well, this is, you're comparing it to some of the lineups we've had in the past. You wouldn't say this looks like our best team, but ultimately it is. And we've got it. And as Andrew Gaze said, the DNA of Australian basketball is right in this team. You know, like you can see it going all the way back. It was beautiful stuff. And
well, I was proud to be a basketball.
Years, mate. It's been 65. Dan said 56, but he actually got the numbers flipped because it was in 1956 that we first competed in basketball.
Right.
So it's been from then till now. That's 65 years.
I was proud to be a basketball. It was amazing. All my mates and, you know, people around, you know, obviously know that I'm involved in basketball. They were like, oh, how happy were you about the basketball? You must be happy. Like, it was like we could all stand up as one and go, ha ha, we did it, you know? And I mean,
that's
like,
right. We did it.
We did it. That's what it was like. And I just, it was just, it was so cool. The amount of, oh, you must be so happy they won a bronze. Yeah. Well, of course I am. I'm also happy that Jessica Fox won, but no, we're talking about it. So, just so good. And I just, you know, now you talk about that. What was it? Was it 8-1 the team went? Because they only lost one game. And then there's three preseason games. They beat the US in the preseason. And the only game they lost was to the gold medalists.
Yeah, which is just a phenomenal achievement. And hats off to Brian Gorge. And I heard him interviewed where he said that in a lot of situations that he's gone into as a coach, he's had to direct what's going to happen. I'm in charge. This is the plan. Yeah. He said he's come into there and the plan was already there. He just had to facilitate it, like Paddy and Joe and Matthew Dellavedova and Aaron Baines and to a lesser extent Chris Gordon. But the main guys that have been back were sort of already directing, this is how we're going to go. We're going towards, we're trying to win a gold medal, which I think is a real essential difference. I was trying to make a point in an article I wrote that we as a public shouldn't expect them to win a gold medal, right? We shouldn't have that expectation, but they should. If they're going for anything less, they're going to get nothing. Right. And they were going for gold. They came home with bronze. We could not be happier. Could not be happier.
I'm not sure if you know, I'm actually used to be assistant coach to Brian Gorge, but I just wanted to.
What was that?
No, but you know, like knowing Gorge, what I do, knowing Gorge as I do, let's put it in perspective. He didn't need to do this. Right. No, he's like done it all. He's the Doyon of coaching. Right.
Hang on a second. He did need to do this. And I'll tell you for why. Because in Athens, we got knocked out quarterfinals, and in Beijing, knocked out quarterfinals. So if there's any kind of blemish, not that that's a blemish. I mean, you're still in the top countries in the world and you're still at the Olympics. But he hadn't achieved at that level, Brad. And so I'm really happy for him, because for anyone like myself who sort of looks, sits back and goes, oh, let's look at the entire picture, and there's a little area where he wasn't that great. He was phenomenal. And I don't think there's any doubt now in my mind that he's the best coach that we've had in Australian basketball.
Well, let me throw it from a different angle for you. Here's a guy that has come back from China, right? Yeah. And he's been away from home for a long time. Yeah. He's in Illawarra with everything that they've gone through with COVID, right? These guys have gone through a hell. Now, for players, all players are going to do that. You know they're going to do that because it's Olympic where they can go. But for Brian, he's won his championships. He's done everything. Yeah. He basically, you know, he could have come out of this looking really bad where, you know, oh, they didn't win and he would have copped it if they didn't. He's been away. He's now got a quarantine to come home. Like the hurdles that he would have had to go through. And be honest, he didn't need it. But I understand what you're saying. He's just that coach. And I couldn't be. Yeah, I just couldn't be prouder of the whole team, but, you know, so good for him. And, you know, I saw some celebrations afterwards. It was great.
One of the things he said was that he regards coaching the national team as being in the military. If your country needs your service, he'll step up and do it.
Yeah,
so I don't think necessarily that he even was an applicant for this job. Mm-hmm. I think the country decided. I think Joe Ingles and Paddy and some of those guys, well, those two particularly, because their first Olympics was with Brian. So they already had experience of him.
And I'm sure Bogut had bits to do with this as well.
And absolutely. So I'm really happy. I'm just happy for the whole thing. I think it's just a phenomenal, it's a euphoric time in Australian basketball. And like I said when we were talking to Danny, if Basketball Australia could get off its butt and could just realise what it has here, they should be printing out Australian singlets with medals five at a rate of knots. They should be coming out of the printing machine, boom, boom, and going into stores at once. And I guarantee you that is not happening. And that's how we blow it. That's how we take this goodwill that mainstream Australia has for the boomers right now and blow it.
That's how we do it.
This should be doing it. Get it out there. Get kids walking down the street with their Mills singlet, proud to be Australian. Proud to be a part of Australian basketball. And on that note, I want to say good night, farewell.
No, sleep. I love it. I love it, buddy. It's great. I just want to throw a couple of quick things for you.
Okay, okay.
Will Melbourne United be happy with Dele for 3 years?
I think Dele's towards the end of his career, and I think 3 years may have been, you know, the thing when you sign people is you tend to think of them at their best. Now, Dele, 5 years ago, winning a championship with Cleveland, and the year before when they were runner-up, when he played sensational, having to step up in the absence of Kyrie Irving. You look at that Dele, and you go, yeah, get him for 3 years, you'd be pretty happy. But he's suffered with injuries. He's had some struggles. You know, there's some people I know that refer to him as Matthew Dele of a turnover after the Olympics. So, you know...
I hadn't heard that one.
And so, you know, I just think at this particular moment, he probably needs a bit of a break to let his body heal. But I think maybe 3 years, yeah, look, this is the same, Brad, as a couple of years ago where your Sydney Kings had signed Bogut, right? Mm. And you had Bogut and you had Lish, you had Randall and Brad Newley and Daniel Kickett. And it's like, yeah, like what a super team. There were people saying before a game was played that that was the best lineup in the NBL's history, right?
Mm.
Not one of those people took into account that every one of those guys was over 30. So when there's a loose ball, they're less inclined to dive on it than someone who's 20. Mm. Okay. But when you look at those guys, you think of them at their best. Yeah. And you think, wow, look who we've got. It's like, hang on, you might be 5-10 years removed from that player. So, yeah, that's the very long – was that a one-word answer you wanted?
No, I think it was good. I think it's interesting. I think, like, when I look at him and losing Mitch McCarron, that's going to be very interesting. So now let me throw you this. Did the Brooklyn Nets get a steal and Patty for 2 years at whatever it was, $6 or $8 million a year?
Yeah, I think they did. But I think Patty's also at that point in his career where he's – he has probably made enough money to live happily for the rest of his life. And so he's now got an opportunity to be on a championship team or a two-time championship team. That is a hell of a lineup. And they have seen what he's capable of. He won't be coming off the bench playing 15 minutes and just shoot a couple of threes and sit down. He will be a part of that rotation and an important part. And I think, yeah, you're right, they got a steal. But I think Patty wouldn't view it that way. He'd view it as a chance to win a couple of championships.
Agreed. Jock Landale, great signing, San Antonio.
Yep. As somebody said from the commentary, the San Antonio commentary, oh, beauty, we'll still be able to say g'day.
Yeah. Dante Exum, amazing Olympics. Houston had let him go. Geez, I hope he picks up an NBA contract.
So do I. He deserves one now. Absolutely. I think he's shown the world that he can play. And his performance down the stretch, you know, not just the fact that you know he had a pretty good Olympics, but down the stretch of the bronze medal game, he was very good.
Nick Kay.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he'd have to find the right environment, you know, like a team like San Antonio or Boston, the right environment where he can do what he does because he is that 1%er guy. He just does those little things. And I think he had 3 or 4 steals in the final. They were all really important. You know, he's such a good player.
Thybul was unbelievable. Sixers have got him sewn up. I want to ask about a couple of NBL boys now. I thought Chris Golding had a great Olympics. He would be very proud of what he's done and he should do.
Yeah, absolutely. He filled the role they needed.
Yep.
That's it. He filled the role they needed. They've got a bronze medal. There you go.
And I thought Sobey, the more the tournament went on, the better he got.
Agreed. Yeah.
And I think he will be even better this year in the NBL from the experience that he got.
Well, I hope you're right because that's good for all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, he got better as the tournament went along. I mean, that 90 seconds he played against Italy was really expensive.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like I thought, well, good, you know, I don't want to see him on the court again if he's going to be like that. But from that point on, I think he got the message that he again, like Chris Gordon, you got a role. It doesn't matter what you do at Brisbane or what you do at Melbourne United. You got a role in this team for us to come away with a bronze medal. Once you embrace that, you're going to be out there and you're going to be fine. And he did embrace. He got better as the tournament went on. Team got better.
I saw enough of Josh Green to know I like him. He'll be good for this Australian team moving on. And I really like Reith. I think he will be phenomenal for Illawarra.
Yep.
And, I mean, there was arguments, should he play more or whatever? That's irrelevant. All I'm saying is I think he held his own and I think he'll be great in Illawarra.
Yeah. I think he's going to be a very good player for Australia going forward for a fair while to come, actually. And I'd like to see – where's Thon Maker these days? I'd like to see him back around
the
place.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I mean, and Jonah Bolden, like he's just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Jonah's in Las Vegas and staying fit and trying to get prepared is my understanding for another gig, so hopefully that can happen. Yeah. But, Boddy, what a week. We obviously have not spoken much of NBL or anything else this week. It was all about the Boomers.
Next week.
And we cannot thank Danny Morsoo enough. That was riveting. And I really enjoyed that, mate. Thank you. And to all our listeners, thank you. And to Piranha Media and, of course, Burger Boss, buddy.
Yeah, the burger was. Yeah, fantastic. Best burgers in Adelaide, South Australia, if not Australia. If not the world. The world.
They'll be sponsoring the Olympics before we know it. Good on you guys. Everyone, have a fantastic week. And remember, we got the bronze, baby.
Yes, we certainly did. So, Brad, you know, everything cool between us? I'm just noticing a little bit of tension.
Well, yes, there is. Why wouldn't there?
What's up?
Mate, you're cheating on me.
Oh, come on. Look, it was just once. It was Piranha Media. They were filming at Burger Boss. Burger Boss, our sponsors, I happened to go along. And they said, come on, you know, you and Phil Smythe, you old mates, you can do a bit of basketball. It was just, you know, we just got together. It was just, it's just the one time, Brad. It's just the one time, I swear.
You're allowed to window shop as long as you don't buy anything. You're staying outside tonight.
All right.